Hello. Welcome to the Creative Shift podcast. I'm Helga Henry. Join me in this space for conversation with entrepreneurs, intellects, business leaders and policymakers. A little while ago on the Creative Shift blog, we created a shareable image that had one of my favourite sayings on it. And it's a saying by Mark McCormack, who wrote What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School. And the saying is, all things being equal, people do business with a friend. All things being unequal, people still do business with a friend. And what the text goes on to say is, so be a friend. And by that, I don't necessarily mean that you have to be friends with all of your clients and all of your customers, but you do have to be friendly. Actually, the very notion of being professional means that sometimes you are not going to like the people you work with. They're not going to share your interests. They're not going to necessarily be like-minded. That doesn't stop you liking them or finding what is likeable about them. And I think that's the key point here. You don't necessarily want to socialise with your clients. In some cases, it may not be very appropriate. Certainly in a coaching context, it's not really advisable. But you do want to have fondness and respect for your clients. And I think that's equally important for your suppliers. If I think about the places I like to go to supply me with my services, it is because I find them friendly. So here we are today at Highbury Studio, and you get a lovely, friendly welcome when you come here, and you're treated in a really nice way. So not only for the quality of sound and the heritage and the history of this place, what partly makes us come back is the service we get here. And friendliness in regard of thinking about people's needs as you would a friend is a really important part of doing business. So you can be a friend. You can think of people's needs. You can anticipate them. You can treat them nicely. You can give them the benefit of the doubt, just like we do with our friends. Doesn't that mean that you have to then, you know, go to their wedding or attend the christening of their firstborn? But all things being equal, people do business with a friend. And all things being unequal, being a friend will swing things in your favour. Who likes to spend time or hang around with people who are a misery to be with, who always make you feel bad, or who suck the energy out of a room just by being there? Not many. And occasionally there's the maverick creative genius where you put up with their moods or their foibles because they're so talented. But frankly, those people are pretty rare. And in the end, my experience shows that the balance tips. And in the end, the difficulty of dealing with them outweighs however talented they are. So, if your business is fueled by connections, by people, and most businesses are, don't forget those wise words of Mark McCormack. All things being equal, people do business with a friend. All things being unequal, people still do business with a friend. So do you know what? Be a friend. So in our next Creative Shift podcast interview, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Professor Kieran Trahan of the University of Birmingham. Welcome, Kieran.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
That's brilliant. Kieran, rather than me make a hash of your job title and where you work in the university, because it's a big place, tell us a little bit about your work right now.
Okay. So my name, as you quite rightly said, is Kieran Trahan, and I'm Professor of Leadership and Enterprise Development at Birmingham University in the Business School. But let's get down to what I kind of really do, because I think that's the things that sort of interests me. I do three things at the university. I research in the area of female entrepreneurship, enterprise and enterprise development. I also take that research and work with policymakers. So how do we influence and impact policy? So it's applied research rather than blue sky research. Mm-hmm. And the third element is stakeholder engagement. And that's the kind of female entrepreneurs on the ground. How does the research that we do resonate with them? What difference does it make, if any at all? So that's the kind of strands of work that I kind of look at.
Brilliant. And as you know, at Creative Shift, we're really interested in female entrepreneurship. It's one of the reasons we invited you along. And I'd like to talk about that in a moment, but and in particular, what are the differences that makes a difference for a female entrepreneur? But to start with you, what led you down this path? What led you to start looking at this area of work?
Two things, really. You know, one, my own prior history. So I'm a daughter of a migrant family, and I grew up in a small business. So I've kind of learned by doing, you know, what does it mean to be holding half a dozen different jobs, but also trying to have economic survival? I learned that through, I guess, my parents. And so I've always been really interested in learning. What is it that makes us want to start, create, generate our own businesses? You know, is it passion? Is it commitment? Is it entrepreneurial? Or is it economic necessity? Mm. So that's the kind of things that really fascinate me. And that's the kind of research that I do. So I suppose my kind of own biography and my own roots, but also my dissatisfaction, I guess, with my, you know, the academic institutions where I learned and the way that we learn, where lots of that research, as interesting as it was, didn't really resonate with me, you know, in the world of practice. Yeah. So those are the different strands that have really kind of impacted in terms of who I am and what I do.
Actually, even as you speak, I'm now reminded of my grandma, who came over from Ireland in the 1960s, had a day job. We had a big Victorian house. We lived on the ground floor. She let rooms out. Mm. You know, that there's a... Is it necessity that's the mother of invention? Mm. Or were you already, by the fact that you left your own country and went to live somewhere else, were you already quite entrepreneurial in that widest sense?
Hmm. I think looking back now, in the early stages, I think I would sort of argue it was necessity. So I kind of remember, you know, living collectively as a family of five in one bedroom. And then thinking, gosh, we've made it, you know, when you had the house and your own kind of bedroom. So I think there's something about being entrepreneurial and having aspirations and wanting to do things differently. And that's against a backdrop of, you know, having, you know, kind of parents that in some ways didn't want you to follow in their footpath. Yeah.
That left where they were for a better life.
Absolutely. And so I think, you know, those two things, you know, one about survival, one about innovation, one about wanting to be creative. But I think most of all, it's being curious. So I didn't have this lovely strategy that you're supposed to have. And I guess in the way that we talk about, you know, female entrepreneurs, do we really have 5-year strategies? Or do we actually kind of take different paths and different roads at different points, you know, in our lives? And I think that's probably true for me.
Yeah. And so moving on to your research, are there key moments? I remember a few years ago... interviewing a fantastic businesswoman called Sunita Alain. Mm-hmm. She started Sirius Production Company with her and two mates when they got made redundant at Jazz FM, like $3,000 a piece redundancy money. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, now it's the biggest syndicator of radio shows. She's left that business now, but turnover of something like $63 million. Mm. But she said at each point that the business changed, the business shifted, when her attitude to it shifted. And sometimes it was life events, and in particular the birth of her child, her son, that kind of caused those shifts. What in your experience, in your work with female entrepreneurs, what are the moments that shift performance?
I think the moments that shift performance is often when they're told they can't do something, or they come up against resistance, or they come against barriers. And for a short while, they retreat. And then actually, it's through those barriers, through those resistance, there is something that makes them stronger and makes them more determined. You know, and the true kind of resonates with, you know, with my own life story. Mm. Growing up in the East End of London, told kids like me didn't go to university. So I was going to university even before I knew what a university was. And I think there's something about when you're told this isn't possible, or this isn't the kind of quite the road for you. And and that's what the research says around female kind of enterprises. You know, they're creative, they're innovative. Of course they're cautious. Of course they have those really big issues about, can I do it? Do I have the confidence to do it? Mm-hmm. But then they look at other role models, or they look at, I guess, shifts that don't allow them to do it, that make them more determined, makes them more resilient.
Give them something to almost run up against and then transcend.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. In a way that says, yes, you can do it, but you do it this way,
yeah.
Not within the context of, I guess, the way that traditional paths have been laid down,
yeah.
In terms of being entrepreneurial.
And we have actually talked on, particularly on the Creative Shift blog, which you can get at www.creativeshift.uk.com/blog, but about the imposter syndrome, you know, that sense that the higher people, and in particular women, go, I mean, some academics go as far as to say it's something that only affects women. I don't agree with that. I think it is across the board that people feel that. But the higher up people go, the more they think one day they're going to be unmasked, that somebody will pull the rug from under their feet. And it's a bit of an unfair question, so you don't have to answer if you don't. But has that ever plagued you? And also, have you come across that in your research subjects, in the female entrepreneurs you've worked with?
I think that's a brilliant, brilliant question. It plagues me on a daily basis. And I think if we were honest with ourselves, it plagues most of us. You know, every move that we make, every promotion that we have, we ask ourselves, you know, are we good enough? Can I do it? And most mornings, you know, there will be times when I kind of wake up and think, one day I'm going to be found out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I actually think that's kind of a healthy vulnerability. And you're absolutely right. I don't think that's something that's just particularly associated with females. I think females talk about it more openly. I think that's the dimension of that. And I'd argue that's good. That isn't anything to be kind of fearful of. I think if you lose that capacity, then I'd be kind of asking the question, maybe you've become stale. And so I think why we're able to ask ourselves and have that fragility about us, then I think there is something about that we are open to learning. You know, we're open to kind of taking some of those risks. And I think my research has shown, actually, all learning is emotional. All learning means that you've got to take risks. And all learning takes us outside of our comfort zone. And that's embedded in this notion of, can I do it? Will I get found out? You know, what does this mean? Because a part of us never quite believes that we have got there, or we can do it.
I think that's right, but I suppose I'd caution against... I understand that there's always... back to those things that you were talking about, about early, about immigrants who want more, who are striving, who always perceive that gap. I suppose the imposter syndrome is... It can sometimes be a sign of that, but also I know some people who are just paralysed by it. And I think it's... For those who are... just riddled with insecurity or lack the confidence to take the next step. What do you think works? What are good strategies to help shift you from that place of paralysis into action? One of the things you mentioned earlier was, I'll show them, you know, rebutting against an obstacle. Is there any other, is there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a huge amount, and that's a really insightful observation, because that whole sense of being paralysed, not being able to kind of connect or move forward. You know, and very often we do one of two things. We fight or take flight. And I think the first and foremost starting point has to be is, what's driving that? So what's driving that vulnerability? What's driving that insecurity? And the way to kind of handle that is either to kind of look at the kind of people that you would like to work with, not like to be, but like to work with. Alongside, who are those that you're most kind of intimidated by? Who are those that you're both? Because in many ways, you've got to work with both.
Yeah.
And in doing that, you know, so you can help shift some of that paralysis by doing what I call some self-reflective work. Mm-hmm. You know, where's that coming from? And sometimes that's kind of rooted in our past. Sometimes it's about rooted in our present. And sometimes it's actually us saying, do you know, we are quite comfortable where we are, and it's the pressure from everywhere else that's making us kind of think we need to kind of strive for the next move. And I think once you work out what that either through dialogue, through discussion with others, through, you know, having what I call critical friends.
Yeah.
And a critical friend isn't somebody that will say there, it's going to be OK. A critical friend is going to kind of ask you those hard questions that's going to really make you think about where... I guess, where that sense of paralysis has come from. So in a nutshell, I would say it's critical friends, it's coaching, it's mentoring, it's having networks that you can kind of talk to.
Kieran, that's all we have time on this interview, but I think I'd really like to pick up with you maybe on with some few questions about those final things that you talked about, some your coaching networks and connections that can again help shift performance. But for now, Kieran, thank you very much indeed. That was really fantastic.
Great, thank you.
So, as a parting rant, I wanted to talk about recently there was a piece of news about George Michael. He was in rehab and there was a picture of him bloated and unhappy and a headline that read Chub Tropicana. Now, yeah, I know it's funny and it was quite a good pun and we've all read those pieces of news about celebrities looking dreadful. But really, my rant is, how is that news? I understand that George Michael's a public figure and I understand that there is a possible public interest in knowing that he's in rehab, but that's the piece of news. Not that he's put weight on. I think we've all had days where we've had a really bad photograph of ourselves and, you know, we feel bad enough about it going up on Facebook. Imagine if it was on the cover of a national newspaper. We'd be mortified. I don't think celebrities sign away every right to human dignity when they become famous. I think they pay for it in all sorts of ways. I think they get all sorts of privileges as well, but that's the world we live in. I suppose what I'm saying is people's personal appearance is not news. Weight loss, weight gain, baby weight, scar tissue, stretch marks. It's not news, so I really wish they'd stop showing it like that. That's all for this time. Thanks for listening to the Creative Shift podcast, recorded in the analogue delights of Highbury Studio. Big shout out to John and our engineer Rob. Tune in next time for more insight, comment, and of course, a rant or two. Bye. Thank you.